Welcome to a very special edition of Chain Attack. I learned it by watching you series.
You mean the totally awesome podcast series?
No, he means the super awesome. No, oh, crap, I screwed it up.
Son of a...
Fouled your own acronym.
I fouled my own acronym up.
Okay, so this is a podcast series that we are doing. The
super hot meta update podcast series.
Yeah, we have
the shmups.
12 episodes that we have for sale, but this episode is for free, and we have one Will Pagani on the podcast with us. Hello, Will. How are you doing?
Hello, Jay. I'm doing fantastic.
Excellent. I assume everyone who listens to our podcast at this point knows who you are, but it would still probably be good to do an introduction.
Sure. I'm a former tournament player. I've been playing War Machine for, I don't know, since it came out, 2003 or something, so a very long time. And about 6 or 8 months ago, I started working in Privateer Press as a developer for War Machine and Hordes.
Awesome. So the format that we're going to do this episode is going to be a little bit different than what we've done on the other ones in this podcast series. We've basically had you on to talk about all Grimkin all the time, but I guess before we get into that, we wanted to ask you a question real quick. This is
sure.
I'd had a friend who contacted me and asked me this question, and he had said that previously Privateer Press had kind of discussed having basically twice a year updates, kind of in January and June ish, and we just had a battle engine update, and he was somewhat thinking slash hopeful that there might be another larger update or something like that coming up in June. I guess, what is the status of things like that, and what is the plan on how Privateer Press is going to update the game going forward?
So at the beginning of the year, we started talking about things called dynamic updates as how we're going to update the game, essentially. So how we will fix problems, how we will errata models, how we will change stats, things like that. And then with CID now being full in effect, those dynamic updates are now built into the CID updates. So if you notice in the Battle Engine one, there were some changes to things like how Dragoons are described in the rulebook and how they function in terms of cards. So that's an example of something that would have normally been in one of these twice a year erratas that used to come out in June and January-ish. So those don't exist anymore. We're not doing big conglomerate erratas like that. And what that does is it lets us address problems much more quickly when they arise, and it lets us be a lot more fluid with how we want to solve issues that come up in the game. So things like the Dragoons, stuff like that. If you are paying attention in the Trencher CID that just finished up, we have a change coming for Assault that normally also would have been one of those things that got held for one of these big erratas. That change just will be included when all of the other Trencher changes occur. So that is the new system here, is whenever a CID finishes approximately a month, and we're going to push that sometimes 5, sometimes 6 weeks, based on international events and very large tournaments and stuff. It could be less than a month, it could be more than a month, but we are keeping it flexible so that we can plan around big events like Lock and Load or Lock and Load EU, WTC, that kind of stuff.
Okay, that's awesome. So I guess one other question, I guess, follow up with that is it likely going to be, like, it seems like your kid update or your kid process is pretty aggressive. Are these things likely to go live on a rolling basis, or is it going to be kind of when each new quarter releases that there will be information coming out through it?
Currently, the plan is a rolling basis, but there may be some quarters where a large concentration of high-end events really kick us into overdrive, and we have to kind of pull in time. That is possible.
Okay. Alrighty. So I guess let's go ahead and move on from that and start talking about Grimkin.
Yeah.
Hooray.
So since Chain Attack is known as being the podcast of positivity, we're going to try to follow that theme this podcast. So I guess my first question is, what do you think is the thing that you enjoy the most when you play Grimkin?
I have always loved the versatility that the Arcana cards bring to the faction. They let you take, like, War Machine is one of the main key interesting points in War Machine to me is how unique and different every Warlock or Warcaster is. And Grimm can certainly have that. Their Warcasters and Warlocks play in incredibly different ways and are hugely varied, but they also get that extra added benefit of the Arcana cards, which gives you another level of customization that isn't there for other factions. So that's my favorite part about the Grimkin.
Okay. So one of the things that we asked you to do was you prepped basically a list for each of the casters. So maybe we can start going through that at the start. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about the caster and then the list and why you like that list. So first off, you have the Heretic.
Yes. So the Heretic to me plays as a very infantry focused caster. I mean, he has spells like Fury, which are great on infantry units. They can certainly be used on war beasts as well, but to me, they've always accentuated large volume of attacks better than the lower number of attacks you would get from a war beast. And then he himself does a lot. He has Guided on his melee weapon, so automatically hits. I believe he's at a POW 14 on that, so he's got a pretty hefty melee presence, especially if he Furies himself. His trump card, which is sort of the Arcana card that is unique to him, gives an additional +2 to hit and damage for a very large number of models in his army against a specific target called Reckoning. So he does very well with large volume of attacks, and he is kind of like Denegra 1 in the way that he can take models that have very mediocre looking stats and then really juice them up to very, very high numbers in terms of attack stats and damage stats. So the list that I gave you guys is the Heretic, and his battle group is a pair of Kravitz, 2 Gorehounds, and a Rattler. This is actually 1 point under his Warbeast points, so I'm spicy like that. I don't mind missing that 1 point, and I love everything that's here for this battle group. And this is a Bump in the Night theme force. So you get Lord Longfellow for free. We've got 2 full units of Hollow Men with Lantern Men, both Lantern Men for free. 2 units of Murder Crows, which pick up Ambush in the theme force, and then 2 units of Naslayers, which are some of the hardest hitting infantry we've ever released in the entire game. They are small based cavalry models, which if you haven't seen pictures of yet, you should check it out. They're awesome.
Jay loves them.
I can tell.
The sculpt actually turned out significantly better than I initially feared.
Nice.
Yeah, I just painted my unit, and it was a lot of fun to paint. And they're comical and crazy, and I don't know. I love the cheekiness of that unit.
Will, did you say both of the Murder Crows get ambush? Did both of the Murder Crows get ambush?
It depends on which version of the rules you have. I have the most up-to-date version.
All right, duly noted.
Yes,
both
Murder Crow units will get ambush.
That's fantastic.
You heard it here first.
I mean, this is also, of course, like I could just totally be misremembering that, and we had a discussion in a meeting, but I am 99% sure that that is correct.
Very well.
Write it down.
Write it down. Now. Ship it. It's too late.
Crucify me later.
It's the new Pagani rule.
Yep. Yep.
Okay,
so. But I really like this list because the Hollow Men give a great ranged support. So they have the range 10 POW 11 guns, the Rat 5 with Apparition, so they can aim a lot and still be mobile, bringing them to Rat 7, which is pretty good. And then in close combat, they have Brutal Charge, so normally they're like Mat 5 POW 11, but with Fury, they're Mat 5 POW 14, and then with Reckoning, his trump card, they're Mat 7 POW 16 for the Hollow Men in close combat, which is can catch a lot of people off guard.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay.
How often do you see them taking advantage of the Lantern Man's ability, Will?
It is one of those rules that it doesn't come up. And which ability are you referring to? Are you referring Death Toll?
I'm thinking of the Ghost Light one, where they make people come closer to him or whatever.
Oh, the one that So that one can be really great for like breaking up shield walls and stuff, especially against Manowar, where they can't be pushed or knocked down. This is an advance, so they can still do that. So you can break up shield wall units with it.
Nice.
Also, if they have some huge beefy solo or something in a zone and you don't have much over there, you can walk it out of the zone with Lantern's Light. You can also clear charge lanes with it, is a lot of what I use it for. And the unit does have Eyeless Sight, so they can do some weird things with that.
Okay, awesome. So overall, what would you say is your favorite thing about this Warlock or this list?
I really love how he buff stacks. We always see a lot of debuff stacking going really well, like in Crix and Scorn to a lesser extent. But I like that he's kind of the opposite of that he buff stacks, and every single model in this army can be very dangerous, including the Twilight Sisters in close combat. Like, they can even be buffed up to be quite powerful.
So you've given us quite a few lists. Are these in order of your favorites, I guess?
Nope, not necessarily.
Do you have a favorite, like your favorite caster right now?
My favorite caster is actually the Wanderer, which is the last list that I gave you. Nope, second to last.
Oh, painful, Will. Why are you treating him like that?
Because, I don't know, he's my boy. That's the order they were in when I was list building. I don't know.
Okay. When we get to the very end, I'll remind me to ask you a question. I think it's actually kind of interesting.
Okay.
So the next one that you had on your list was the child. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the child and then about your list?
So the child kind of reminds me of like a mixture of Morgul 1 and Chromac 1. So she has Abuse, which is the same spell Morgul 1 has. That's the plus 2 speed and strength and deal D3 damage to your war beast. She also has Field Marshal Pain Response. So when you do abuse your war beast, it also charges for free because it has damage on it, which is a little clever thing we snuck in there. She wants to run super war beast heavy because of abuse, because of that pain response field marshal, and then all of her spells are, or not all, but most of her spells are centered around war beasts. The Chromac 1 portion of her kind of comes in through her unique spell called Tantrum, where if you damage war beasts around her, they have to be in her command range, which is only 5 inches. But if you damage war beasts around her, they get to make an advance and an attack. So that kind of gives you that Warpath-esque feel of threat range extension. Savvy listeners will notice that she has two ways to increase her war beast speed between Tantrum and Abuse. So Skin and Moans is base speed 5, goes up to 9 after those, 3 inches for the charge with reach, really gets him out there, 14 inches. Fully loaded with corpses, as Skin and Moans is POW 21 with her. Is that right?
Sounds right.
Yeah.
And then you can enrage that Skin and Moans with Lady Carriana Rose to go to POW 23. This list that I have provided here also includes a Cage Rager, which has Wraithbane as its animus. So you can have a POW 23 Skin and Moans that also ignores defense and armor buffs.
That seems okay.
And to run down the list, because we haven't done that yet, it is Child, Cage Rager, 4 free Kravitz from the Menagerie Theme Force, 2 Gorehounds, a Rattler, 2 Skin and Moans, a Glimmer Imp, 4 Gremlin Swarms, Lady Carriana Rose, a minimum unit of Dreadrots, and a Death Knell.
So are the Dreadrots basically almost like
fuel for the Death Knell?
Yeah, the fuel for the Death Knell.
Pretty much, yeah. If every game they just get shot to death, I'm happy with their inclusion.
And then Death Knell just feeds the beasts, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The Death Knell picks up the corpses, so you get the bonus armor aura from the Death Knell. It can also then give them to your Skin and Moans. It can give them to your Cage Rager. This list is super aggressive in how you can play. The child can really, really just get up there, and she's quite a beast in combat. I'm going off the top of my head here, guys, so if I get any stats wrong, call me on it on the internet and tag me on Facebook. But I'm pretty sure she's Mat 8, POW 15 base, goes to 17 with Outrage. If you damage her, and she also goes to armor, I believe it's either 21 or 22 after the Death Knell and Outrage. So she's a very durable caster. You then have 4 shield guards with Kravitz, and then you also have Arcane Vortex from the Cage Rager. So you have all sorts of defensive tech for the child to really get up there and to really make sure that not only she can get into combat herself and survive, but also that your Skin and Moans make it. Because without the corpses, the Skin and Moans can be pretty easily removed. The Theme Force starts them each with 1, which bumps them up their armor a little bit, but they're still not the most durable war beasts out there.
What do the Gremlin Swarms do for the child, Will?
So Gremlin Swarms in the Dark Menagerie Theme Force gain Serenity, which is the unit from Shifting Stones, and I want to say Vale 2 has it as well, where during at the beginning of your turn, essentially, you can remove a Fury from a war beast around the Gremlin Swarms. So it helps you manage the Fury. They're also just very fast incorporeal stealth models. So whereas this army wants to play really tight and close together because the child's command range is only 5 inches for the Tantrum spell, those Gremlin Swarms can spread out and either take objectives or contest objectives very effectively if you don't need the Fury management.
Okay, so what would you say is your favorite thing about the child?
I just love how deep she can go herself. Like, she can really get up there, and she'll kill a heavy in a round and survive the retaliation the next turn, and then just keep piling it on. And her Arcana card, her trump card, is called Wrath, and it gives all of her battle group an additional Fury, which includes herself. So she goes up to a Fury 8 caster for that turn.
Wow.
And then the Skinnamones each go to Fury 5. K-Trigger goes to Fury 5. Like, you can do a lot of work on that turn.
And what triggers Wrath?
It's either destroying or damaging a War Beast in her control area. I think it's destroying.
So you're sending Kravitz out there to bait your opponent. Forth,
my little Kravitz.
Yep, absolutely.
Excellent. Okay, so the next list that you provided was the Dreamer. Why don't you tell us a little bit about him and the list?
Her, sir.
Sorry, my bad. I knew that. with her plushies.
Yes. So the Dreamer is a very strange warlock. I don't really have any comparison for her in the normal game. She plays a very interesting mix of both war beasts and infantry, and I don't know, she's just weird. She has like Artifice Deviation, she has Abyssal Gate, so that gives her a lot of control and or threat range extension. Artifice gives her a lot of survivability, so she can give cover to herself, because she's not exactly the most durable caster. My personal favorite thing for Artifice is to cast it on Naslayers, because they do like to get shot a lot. But that does make them defense 17 in shooting, which is substantial. And then you can play a melee threat range game with her as well with Artifice by putting Rough Terrain in front of stuff. And then your Phantasms, which she creates by destroying enemy models, can block charge lanes and just kind of gum up the whole works. So she's a very weird alternate style of control caster than what we've seen from a lot of these other ones like Haley 2, Harbinger in the past. Like, those kind of casters are sort of more traditional control casters to me, where she is very different. I really like Rattlers with her because Manifest Destiny really helps them with their Overtake Berserk chains that they can get going. And then it also makes them a large threat to heavier targets as well. Being POW 13, boosting damage, getting 4 dice, dropping the lowest, does a lot for her. The list that I've included here is the Dreamer, a Cage Rager, 1 set of Kravitz. So they come in pairs, so you get 2 Kravitz there. 3 Rattlers, a Glimmer Imp, Lord Longfellow. The Glimmer Imp and Lord Longfellow are both free in this list. A full unit of Hollow Men with a Lantern Man, 2 units of Madcaps, a unit of Naslayers, a unit of Piggybacks, and a unit of Twilight Sisters. I like the Piggybacks here because they can kind of form a bunker for her to stand behind, and you can hide your... then you can hide your Naslayers in your Artifice instead of having to hide her in the Artifice. And then with Twilight Sisters, synergize very well with both Naslayers and Piggybacks, kind of bringing the back turn over turn to help you in this attrition fight that you're controlling out here. The Glimmer Imp, because she doesn't really have any great mat fixing or buffs or anything. And the Glimmer Imp stacking with her small-based Phantasm, which has Mark Target, which is the rule from Rangers and I believe the Moonhound, which gives you +2 to ranged attack rolls. So Holloman can walk up and like 2 or 3 man CRA as small base model, pop out this little Phantasm with a Glimmer Imp. It makes them rat 9 effectively against that unit.
Nice.
So they can do a whole lot of work against infantry there.
Okay, I just have to know. Talk to me about the Mad Caps.
Okay.
I love them so much, but I don't understand how to use them at all.
So to me, Mad Caps are sort of this endless tide of little bombs that are eventually going to show up, and they're kind of an embodiment of the damned if you do, damned if you don't play style of Grimkin, where if you don't kill them, they're going to continually spew out cask imps, and if you do kill them, they have the, I'm completely blanking on the name of the rule, but the one that basically lets them like rocket across the field and blow up a unit of infantry when they die. And if they try and go for the route of like, oh, well, I'm going to whittle down the unit, the Twilight Sisters can even put the grunts back into the unit. So like, okay. It's this infinite tide of crazy gnomish things throwing fire, exploding, and flying across the battlefield at you.
And they're a unit too, right? So
correct. I don't know if they're qualified as a weapon crew, but they're basically a weapon crew.
Well, I was going to say, who knows what rules you have, but the old rules I'm looking at say
yes.
that.
Okay.
They're the one. I think he's on a large base.
Yeah, he's got the boss.
The boss is on a large base, and he's got the 2 small base caps with him. But yeah, recurring those models is always fun.
Okay. So, what is your favorite thing about the Dreamer?
Just how versatile that caster is. She can do so many different things. She has, Enfeeble is -2 to attack and damage rolls. Like, that's an amazing spell. Artifice is great. It gives you a lot of control. It gives you a lot of defense. She has game, And to me, she kind of reminds me of like Kruger too, where you can never count her out because she always has some weird trick or something that she can do, whether it be with the bulldozing phantasm or an abyssal gate or just all sorts of different options that she can use.
Awesome. So I believe the next list that you shared with us was the King of Nothing. Is that correct?
Yes. And this is your favorite warlock. Yes, Jay?
I am pretty interested in him, yes. I'm excited to give him some play.
I remember my first day at Privateer Press, I walked in, and they're like, here's all the Grim Cannon. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. What does that guy do?
Hold on a second, Will. If Jay likes him, you should really reevaluate
his power level
before you go to print. I'm just warning you now. Okay, continue.
He's just a very strange warlock. He's another one of those ones that like we don't really have an analogy inside of the game for him. He almost actively hurts his own army by being around them. So he gives -2 armor to all models within 5 inches. That's not just enemy models. When you destroy his models, he gets to cast spells for free. When you destroy his models, it triggers his trump card, which is Taste of Ash. Which Taste of Ash was one of those trump cards in our CID process where everyone was like, this doesn't do enough, this doesn't do enough, this doesn't do enough. When you see Taste of Ash happen, you will no longer have any doubts.
No, I'm pretty sure it needs a few more buffs, Will.
It needs a few more buffs. Yeah. Thanks, Jay. I'll go make a note immediately.
Excellent.
it's the kind of card... So, like, we're starting to see infantry a lot more now, and that was probably one of the issues that it had in CID was that not that many people were running infantry back then, because this was before a lot of the theme forces were out, and this was before... the new Steamroller stuff was coming out that was really encouraging infantry play. But so what the card does is whenever you destroy, disable one of his war beasts. So if you get some weird Grimkin war beast in the future that has tough or something, it'll still trigger. Once you disable one of his war beasts, the model that disabled it suffers D3 damage, and then the D3 closest models also suffer D3 damage. So against infantry armies, if they charge 2 Krabbits and they kill both Krabbits, they're going to lose between 4 and 8 guys.
Seems okay.
Just for killing 2 Krabbits, right? Approve. So, like, I'm playing Ghost Fleet, and I want to clear this zone so I can put scenario pressure on the king. Cool. There's 2 Krabbits and a Gorehound in that list. Awesome. My entire unit of pirates died killing those 3 models.
Totally worth it.
But, like, that's the kind of thing that Taste of Ash does, is like I killed 7 points of Kravitz and a 6-point Gorehound and lost a 13-point unit of infantry. So whereas this may not be the best trump card against, say, 8 Marauders, it is very, very strong in other situations. And the king has other ways of dealing with 8 Marauders, like he has a Cloud Wall. He has Ashes to Ashes. He has Scything Touch plus his own armor aura as a 4 armor swing. This list is built in Dark Menagerie, so it contains Carianna Rose, which has Enrage. So he can deal with armor very well, naturally, and then his trump card basically says infantry armies need to be very, very careful about what they're doing here, or it could go very poorly for them. So the list is a Cage Rager, 4 free Kravitz from Dark Menagerie, 4 more Kravitz, a Frightmare, 3 Gorehounds, 3 Rattlers, a Glimmer Imp, 4 Gremlin Swarms, one of which is free, Lady Carianna Rose, and a minimum unit of Dreadrots. Now, Josh, you pointed out earlier about the unit of Dreadrots in the child list being there simply to die. This unit serves the exact opposite purpose. This unit is in this list to not die, because the King of Nothing has Sands of Fate, and whenever you destroy one of his war beasts, he can cast a spell for free. So if you're trying to shoot him to death, and he shield guards to a Krabbit, and you kill the Krabbit, he can then Sands of Fate and replace one of these Dreadrots somewhere else on the board, within 16 inches of his current location, because he is Fury 8. If he is really far up there, applying his -2 armor aura to 2, 3, 4 of these Marauders that we mentioned earlier, and you kill the Krabbit that's blocking your charge lane, he can cast Sands of Fate and just disappear. So... King of Nothing, and I know I've told you this before, Jay, when we talked about it. King of Nothing, to me, is probably the highest skill cap caster in this faction because he can do so many crazy plays. And it really rewards the players that can see these interactions and see all of these different spell casting opportunities and how to use them during your opponent's turn. So that's why the Kravitz are there, is for both the trump card as well as, I'm pretty sure it's called Kingdom of Silence is the name of the world that lets him cast spells. That's either that one or the minus two armor one. but my favorite setup for the king is the king surrounded by eight Kravitz, which is already incredibly hard to kill. They all have minus two armor, so it's more likely that you will kill them when they shield guard. It makes them armor 10. Yeah. and you get a Cage Rager that's an arc node, and you can channel that out of activation cast spell. It starts with a corpse, so you get an arcane vortex if you need it. If you don't need it, you get the channeler. You then create your cloud wall in front of your army. You can run your Gorehounds and your Frightmares up into that if you want, or you can run the Gorehounds into it if you want. They have prowl. You can put the Rattlers directly behind it with their Animus up, which is countercharge. So if they do walk up, like if a heavy runs into the cloud, you can have the minus two armor aura from King of Nothing close enough to it. And then you can have Scything Touch on one of your countercharging Rattlers. So your first Rattler charges in at POW 15, and then the two more charge in at POW 15 as well. So if something does walk into the King's Cloud Wall, it's going to take three POW 15s to the face. Boosted damage for charging.
No wonder you like this, Jay.
Yes. And then, of course, you have the Gremlin Swamps, as we mentioned before, to help with Fury Management with Serenity from the Theme Force. They're excellent at holding down scenario zones. You can use them to block charge lanes. Like they're just excellent. And then Rattlers fully buffed are POW 19. So if you have the minus two armor aura from the King, you have Scything Touch, and you have Enrage from Kiriana Rose, a Rattler hits as hard as most heavies.
Fair.
Excellent.
He also has an RFP spell, so take that, Ghost Fleet, I guess.
So you can't notice this, Will, but this whole time while you've been talking about the King of Nothing, like Trevor's been doing this like rolling my eyes of, oh my god.
End me now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
but remember, as I said, this is one of the most complicated casters in the game. So this will take a player that's really wishing to specialize in Grimkin and really dig down and learn how to play this caster.
Someday Scorn will get a complicated caster.
Someday.
I've said this multiple times, but every interaction just makes it more true. I'm super excited to play Grimkin, mainly just to cause Trevor to bitch about it.
I stand on my statement at the beginning of the discussion of the King of Nothing.
Hashtag life goals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the next caster is the Wanderer. You said that he was your favorite caster of the lot, so why don't you tell us about him and your list?
So I'm going to start with the list on this one, and then I can talk about the different pieces of it instead of the other way around,
okay,
because maybe that's a better format. We're only five deep, so we got one more after this one. The Wanderer, a Cage Rager, two sets of Kravitz, so a total of four, is exactly the Wanderer's beast points. We then have two sets of Cask Imps, four Cask Imps, Lord Longfellow, our great spidery buddy, which everyone needs to be aware of his rules. He murders warcasters, so play safe when Lord Longfellow's around. Two Trapperkins, two Witchwoods, which are free for the Theme Force, along with Lord Longfellow, also free. Two units of Madcaps, two units of Naysayers, a full unit of Piggybacks, the Twilight Sisters, and a Death Knell.
So
this list is very silly. Josh will notice that the unit of Token Dreadrots is missing to supply their bodies to the cause for the Death Knell, because we have replaced them with Madcaps and Caskims here. So one of the things that I really like about the Wanderer is he's another one of those very frontline casters, but unlike the Child, he doesn't do very much work himself. Like, he doesn't kill models. I want to say he's Mat 5, POW 11. So he's not going to kill anything in close combat. And then his spray doesn't actually do any damage at all. But the Madcaps are twofold here. One, they make Caskims. If your opponent doesn't kill Caskims, they do a lot of damage. They do POW 14s, they set stuff on fire. They cause a lot of mayhem if they don't. If they do kill Caskims now, the Death Knell gets the corpses. So the Madcaps are a infinite corpse generator for the Death Knell. They will continually make more Madcaps, which can then die to continue to fuel the Death Knell. And if you do kill the Madcaps, we get those corpses, and we also get to launch our weird still rocket thing that blows up infantry units. And the Wanderer loves the Madcap rule Vent Fumes, because he is so far forward, because his control area is only 12, because he's only a Fury 6 caster, and he has Star-Crossed, so he has to play very far forward with that 12-inch control area to apply it to all of the different things that you need to apply it to. So the Madcap's Vent Fumes give Stumbling Drunk, And what that does is it stops the Wanderer from being knocked down, and it also makes him very hard to assassinate. And that's you're going to find out that that's a very big thing for this list, is that the Wanderer is almost impossible to kill in this list. He's going to be standing in the front of his army. He has Fog of War and he has Starcrossed, so he is huge defense. If you're not range 12 or higher, you're going to be in Starcrossed to attack him. He can't be knocked down. Whenever you do hit him, he stumbles around. And then his Trump Arcana card allows him to immediately place to one of his crossroads markers after he is damaged by an attack, and he can transfer that damage for free.
Jeez.
Yes. So it's very hard to pin him down, very hard to get him there. And I just mentioned crossroad markers. What those are is at the end of every turn for the Wanderer, you're going to put three markers out around him. And what those do is those are sort of his like teleportation points, essentially. So if an enemy model touches one, he gets mad, and one of his models can advance 2 inches. If they don't touch them, at the start of his next turn, the Wanderer can choose to replace any of those crossroad markers. So there is some counterplay there for his trump card. So if you do touch all of his crossroad markers, he can no longer play his trump card. But every time you touch one, something gets moved 2 inches, and they get picked up once they get touched. So they're removed. Mayslayers with Fog of War are defense 15. You've got Starcrossed covering that as well, so that's a very solid defensive stat. In melee, they're still defense 13, still Starcrossed, pretty solid. You have Recursion from the Twilight Sisters, and you have my favorite thing in this list, actually, since I know Jay's about to ask me, is Witchwoods. Because of Fog of War, they have Prowl, so they will always be stealthed, and they have 2 PAL 15 initial attacks. Which are quite strong at ripping off armor. They can usually get behind stuff with shields because they place 5 inches. You can cast Wraithbane on them from a Cage Rager if you like to give them Blessed so they no longer have to deal with defense or armor buffs. And then they also have Seduction, so they can start moving around your opponent's models. Actually, it's not Seduction, it's a different rule. It's Bewitched. They can start moving around your opponent's models, force them to kill each other, all that good stuff. And then you've got 2 Trapperkins for scenario play, as well as just being really annoying by going in and out of trapdoors and holding down entire areas of the board where your opponent doesn't want to go.
Will, when the Witchwood bewitches an enemy model, can that be used to make it step on a crossroads marker to trigger the Trump Arcana?
No.
Okay, because it's your model during that moment.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it becomes friendly to the Grimkin player.
Alrighty, so now that you've talked about all this, why would you say that he is your favorite of the Defilers?
I really enjoy odd control casters, and Fog of War and Starcrossed on a really squishy but hard to pin down Warlock is just something that I really enjoy playing. And I've always liked, I also forgot to mention his range attack has Beacon, so he's one of the speed buffs in the faction as well. And I always loved Naslayers, and he plays them very, very well.
Okay, awesome. So why don't we go ahead and bring it home and talk about the 6th caster, Old Witch 3.
Old Witch 3. She can play in a lot of different ways. The list that I've submitted is Zvanna Aga, a Cage Rager, 3 free Krabbits for the Menagerie Theme Force, 2 Frightmares, 2 Skin Moans, 4 Gremlin Swarms, one of which being free, Carriana Rose, a full unit of Dreadrots, and a Death Knell. And as I was saying a second ago, she can play in a variety of different ways. So there's probably 4 or 5 different army builds in switching between both theme forces that I've played with her, and I really like all of them. We've seen upwards of like 7 or 8 Frightmares being played with her because of Divinator gives them rerolls on attack rolls. We've done a lot of infantry-based lists because Hellhole is really powerful with piggybacks, and combine that with Twilight Sisters, you can bring back up to 5 piggybacks a turn. So there's a lot of different ways that you can play the Old Witch. This one is one of my favorites. This one is mostly based around Boundless Charging Skin Moons. You can also Boundless Charge, I think, up to 7 Dreadrots here, which is kind of strange. So like you get this very fluid, very long threat range list that has decent shooting between the Frightmares. She has Curse of Shadows, so those guns go up to PAL 15 for some target softening. Your Skin and Moans can be very high PAL again. You've got Curse of Shadows, you've got Enrage with the corpses, they get really far up there. So this is what I like about this list, is it trades very well, it trades very efficiently, and then with the Gremlin Swarms, a lot of the times you can get models for free by blocking charge lanes and stuff after your skin and mounts do go in.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry. In the document we have, which was the Week 5 one, her feat says that she gets all three of her Arcane Mastery effects, but in the new version of it, she's got five. So she gets all five?
It's all five. Okay. Yep. Yep. Awesome. She'll get all five of them.
Okay, so what is your favorite thing about Old Witch 3?
I think it's just her versatility. Like, the number of lists that you can build with her is insane. You can go like three or four different directions. You can go a beast brick. You can go a slow piggyback brick. You can do like double murder crow, triple dread rots with her. You can play Nayslayers. You can play this really sweet recursion list by utilizing Hellhole and trying to cast less spells and using mostly less offensive spells and using mostly balanced charges. So like she's very versatile in what she can do. So when someone says like, "Oh, I'm playing Old Witch 3," you can't just be like, "Oh, cool, I know what that does." You have to be like, no, okay, cool, what are you playing with her? Because she has so many options.
Awesome. So the question I was going to ask here at the end of the thing is, looking through the list, it looks like you have about half of the lists that are using the death knell and half of the lists that are not. Do you think that that's going to be a fairly common usage of with that model?
Probably. The only caster that I would say you really never want the death knell with is the King of Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
One, because usually he's going to give it -2 armor, which is not great,
right,
and it gets shot a lot.
Right.
But he also usually wants his models to die,
right,
which is very abnormal for War Machine and Hordes in general. But like giving your guys +2 armor is actually almost always counterproductive with him. But the other casters, you can get away with it, you cannot get away with it. Like, this Heretic list is sort of a faster, more ambushy, kind of envelop their whole army list. You can definitely build a slower piggyback list that plays a death knell and one or two units of piggybacks. So I think there's a lot of fluidity in the death knell and what it's included with.
Cool. Well, do you guys have any further questions for Mr. Pagani?
I guess my question would be, what would you like our listeners to know about the release of Grimkin? I mean, what should they be most excited about with this new faction?
Well, obviously, Nayslayers are the things they should be most excited about. Because I am the leader of Team Nayslayer. So. And Hungerford and his filthy, filthy Team Piggyback is the worst.
That's fair.
I think this is a very unique faction to War Machine and Hordes. I don't think we've ever really done anything that plays quite like these guys. And every model is very versatile in this list, so don't gloss over stuff. A lot of my lists here don't contain very many Frightmares. I don't think I actually went over why the Frightmare is in the King of Nothing list. But its Animus lets you see through clouds. So with King of Nothing, if they kill one of your War Beasts and your cloud wall is up, you might not be able to cast the spell that you want. But if you cast the Frightmare Animus the previous turn, you'll be able to see through your own cloud wall.
Nice.
Okay.
So there's a lot of little interactions like that built into this army that are very niche, very complicated, but very exciting to find and very exciting to use. So don't gloss anything over in this faction. We've done a lot of work to make sure that every model has multiple uses and multiple interactions.
Awesome. I guess those were our closing questions. Do you have any closing things that you'd like to volunteer, or did that kind of cover it?
That pretty much covered it, but I am super excited to get to play this with everybody in lock mode.
Yeah,
I'll have me there. It'll all be painted.
I'm pretty excited to have War Room update and get to look at building some lists and stuff and take some models to my painters and start cracking the whip.
Excellent.
I still want to ask Will where he would rank Grimkin, even though Jay would.
Oh, my heavens.
Rank Grimkin? Like,
out of all the 13 factions.
Well, I mean, I feel like the number 13 is appropriate for the 13th faction. Grimkin specifically.
They're all number one, Josh.
Thank you.
Yes. I mean, they're all number one, Josh.
Well, Will, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you guys for having me, and I'll come back whenever you like.
Excellent. I'm sure that our listeners will find this information very useful with the Grim Confession.
I do know the Facebook group has been clamoring for it, so.
Oh, well, awesome. It should be live here within a few days.
Probably tomorrow, hopefully.
Yeah. So thank you everyone for listening, and if you've enjoyed this, then hopefully you will also enjoy some of the other podcasts that we have in the podcast series we're doing.